Good afternoon and welcome back. This week I'm going to be focusing on the Aperture Foundation and their publishing program. As you all know, we are hosting an auction at Christie's in celebration of the Aperture Foundation, but also primarily as a capital campaign fundraiser for them to acquire a permanent home here in Manhattan. And so I'm going to focus on the foundation and their publishing program. And as you know, it's the fall season here in New York. The leaves are changing. I'm still out in the courtyard where it happens to be warm enough today, but I think that's going to change quickly. And before all memories of summer fade, I thought I would read from a book that very much evokes the spirit of summer in the Northern Hemisphere. It's called The Photographer in the Garden. And this is a fantastic book covering kind of the history of photography as seen through photographs of the garden. The editor was Denise Wolfe, who is going to be speaking with me tomorrow about some of the works in the Aperture auction. And there's an introductory essay by Jamie Allen, who's the associate curator of photography at the Eastman Museum in Rochester, as well as commentaries by Sarah McNear on individual pictures and some of the chapters. The book itself is organized kind of thematically. There's an overview introductory essay, which I'm going to read from. And then there's everything from Paradise Garden to form and nature, design and dominion, the seasons, pleasure garden, arranged flowers, the gardeners themselves, lots of different chapters that really evoke this entire genre of photography. So I'm going to dig right in and read from the essay by Jamie Allen, the associate curator at the George Eastman Museum, and the title of her essay is called The Garden as a Subject in Photography. Thanks for joining. When photography was introduced to the public in 1839, it immediately began to displace the record-making function of other art forms, such as drawing and painting. At the time, photographs seemed to be a direct transcription of reality, precisely recording what was put in front of the camera or in contact with the photographic materials. In creating these early transcriptions, it is not surprising that the first photographers turned to their gardens for inspiration. The earliest processes worked best when the photosensitive surface was fresh or still wet. They also required long exposures to an intense source of light. Thus, photographers engaged with subject matter found in their own backyards, since those spaces were close to their darkrooms, provided abundant light for their compositions, and often contained botanical specimens that could be used to test the light sensitivity of the chemistry. William Henry Fox Talbot's first experiments with light-sensitive silver salts recorded the details of plant species. A botanist from a young age, Talbot went on to develop the basic principles for most of the paper-based processes that were popular in the 19th and 20th centuries. In particular, the concept of using one negative to make multiple positive prints. It was, however, his insistence that his images were not made by his own hand, but by nature's hand, that paved the way for the multitude of uses and understandings that have been applied to photography over its nearly 200-year history. In his brief historical sketch of the invention of the art, published as part of his illustrated book, The Pencil of Nature, in 1844, Talbot recalls his own failed attempts to make sketches using a camera lucida and camera obscura while on vacation in Italy. While both of these instruments helped artists to make accurate drawings, the results were limited by the individual's skill in draftsmanship. Talbot noted that drawing with a camera obscura or camera lucida required not only skill but also patience for an amateur to make even a, quote, mere souvenir of the scene. In contrast, he went on to express, photography had many possible uses as a method of reproduction that was faster and easier than the printing processes of the time, as a means of cataloging collections of objects, both individually and en masse, as a technique for creating portraits and landscapes, as a way of recording discoveries made through a microscope, and as a method for documenting all of the details of nature, whether they be the branches of a tree, the veins of a leaf, or the structure of a dragonfly wing, all without the need for an artist's intervention. Early photographs reflected this myriad of applications, many of which relied on existing artistic and scientific conventions, and the garden appeared across all of them. As Talbot suggested, photography's potential to facilitate the scientific study of botanical specimens was recognized immediately upon its invention. Other uses quickly followed, including portraiture, one of the most popular, which allowed people to obtain more detailed likenesses without the expense of a painted portrait or silhouette. Meanwhile, the photographers turned their cameras to traditional genres associated with painting, particularly landscape and still life, allowing for an expanded understanding of both mediums. Photography increased visual literacy during the Industrial Age as society embraced the reproducibility of images. In the last century, countless technological changes have made photography an integral part of both our culture and individual lives. Now, with the prominence of digital photography, photographers often use the medium to reestablish our connection to the natural world in ways that reflect this new photographic reality. I'm going to leave you with that. The book itself is fantastic. I hope you'll enjoy the flip through, and I look forward to speaking soon.